dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark DiValenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark DiValenti, and this is Brain Burrow. This is one of our Digging Deep sessions where we have an opportunity to talk with our guest, and they have an opportunity to share about their motivation, their fears, their values, their goals, and give some tips on how they navigate life. So I'm very pleased to have on the show today Ms. Debbie Rashawn, and I'm going to give her an opportunity to answer the big open-ended question, who exactly is Debbie Rashawn?
That is an excellent question, one that I have tried to answer my entire life. So probably the answer would be someone who is constantly searching and reimagining herself. I've been everything from, you know, a child of the streets to like an independent film actress. I'm a writer. I do podcasts and I've done satellite radio. So I've done a whole bunch of different things. So I'm constantly sort of mutating, if you will, who I am and what I do, because that's what you have to do to have longevity.
Yeah, thanks for that in-depth answer. I think you revealed a lot about yourself there, and clearly you're in touch with your motivation.
Yes.
So when is it enough? When will you ever stop searching? When do you ever feel that you're comfortable with not searching or pausing with that?
Well, I mean, that's a good statement, because I think most people that I know and most people that I really respect, the artist, doesn't matter what their, you know, particular area is, I think they always go through various times where they, it's not that they quit anything, but they kind of reevaluate what, you know, what's going on? What am I doing? Is this working? Am I happy? Am I doing anything worthwhile? And they constantly question themselves. It's people that don't, I find, that don't go quite as deep. I think you always have to wonder, is it enough? Is it too much? Is it still exciting? Because there's many times in someone's career that it becomes not exciting. And, you know, you have to look at what is happening around that. You have to reevaluate yourself. Like for myself, I could say that, you know, this sort of happened around, you know, set accidents on sets, for example, or dealing with, you know, especially when you're coming up, like in the 80s and 90s, dealing with the type of characters that you have to deal with. Very misogynistic. Not everybody, I don't mean that at all, but I mean, you know, there was a lot of people. So there were moments where you're saying, well, okay, I'm doing this, but, you know, is this really what I wanted and what I studied for, number one? And then you wonder, well, is this treatment worth it? If you don't become like a really extremely mainstream, or even I could even go and say wealthy person, then you could say, well, if I'm just doing it for art, then it really has to be satisfying and fun, because that's what I'm getting out of it, is my ability to express myself. So if I'm not doing that, then it becomes really self-depreciating in many ways. And again, I'm looking back at more of the exploitation and stuff like that, that existed far more than it does now, but certainly did for decades of my career. So I think that was, you know, that really changed in around 2000. I think, you know, there was a lot of very, very different roles, things were changing, things were starting to change. I was doing things differently. I was looking at things differently. I wasn't looking at it like, you know, especially when things were being shot in actual film, there was so less work. So then you really just wanted to exercise your craft. And then, you know, people could look at what you've done and say, oh, well, those are, you know, silly movies or whatever. How could you possibly do that? And well, you can, because if you've studied comedy, improv, all this kind of stuff, it actually, as crazy as it sounds, it's like, well, do you want to work in front of a camera and exercise your abilities or not, regardless? And then you kind of hit a wall, but then 2000 came around and things really started to improve slowly but surely for what, you know, women were doing in the indie scene, for sure. And especially, you know, just throwing it out there, just, you know, if you were not the type of person that was, you know, perhaps, for example, just one example, you know, dating a director or producer to get into movies, and it was strictly on whether it be audition or, you know, just your work, for example, then it was a harder haul then. I think it's better now. And also because of the volume of work that's out there, it makes it easier now to pick and choose.
Interesting. I mean, it sounds like you've gone on quite the journey over the last few decades.
Yeah.
So especially before 2000, and when, as you said, it sounded a bit more trying, let's just say, and that's an understatement. How did you keep pushing through? Because I'm sure you became incredibly frustrated. You were wondering why you were doing this. How did you push through that?
Well, I think at that point, it was still, you know, for the first longest time prior to the 2000s, we'll say that, we'll put that line in the sand. I think it was really riding on, like, between when you're studying and then also the excitement of being working on film. So that really goes a long way, you know, to be working at and succeeding, whether it be in tiny ways or larger ways, to do what that you've always wanted to do and what you've studied to do, and just to be there and just give it your all regardless. And, you know, not have any sort of role models or mentors around to say, you know, hey, you know, try this or that, or maybe, you know, not having anyone. Like, I remember having a manager who was, you know, she was an agent and then she turned into a manager. And she was interesting, but she really wasn't, she wasn't very good in the sense, she wasn't good for me. And I think that because of the material, what I personally related to, what I was doing well at, were things that were more off the hook or stranger. And I sort of like gravitated more and more to the indie world. And she didn't, I don't think she really knew what to do with me, because I was never the girl next door in any way. Like, I didn't look like the girl next door, and I didn't seem like, or didn't, you know, that wasn't my thing. You know, my I know as an actor, you have to be able to do everything, but it really wasn't something that was sort of my niche, if you will. So because of that, and back then, a person wouldn't really know what to do with you. So I think that's when I became more and more engrossed, if you will, in the indie scene and that kind of material. But it was, you know, really challenging and hard. And it was sort of like, of course, the internet existed, mind you, of course, but it wasn't so much, it was more like, well, okay, I'm going to get my chops doing, you know, this stuff, but chances are not a lot of people's going to see it. You know what I mean? Not a lot of people is going to see it. So, and then fast forward, and it's like, you know, there's nothing that people don't see. So that safety guard, if you will, that practicing ground that you were using a lot of things for, definitely fell away. And so then you've got this sort of hodgepodge of stuff that's all over the place, from good, super good, to super bad, to everything in between. So definitely a long haul.
Yeah, I would say so. Thank you for sharing that. There's so much, again, to talk about here. One, from what I'm hearing from you, you're saying that there's an importance in looking within yourself, because the world out there is a bit crazy and pretty cruel sometimes. So it's always the way you got through all of this is just always focus on the art and the enjoyment you got from the art, right? So that's one thing. Yep. And then the second thing is, you know, before we even get to the internet part, the agent, the person that was working with you didn't really get you. So you couldn't really depend on her. Has there been anybody in your life who has been that support? Somebody who's got you, somebody who's been there to help augment the person that you are?
No, absolutely not. Not anybody. Because I think back then everybody was kind of struggling in their own ways with the same thing. And then also, like I said, with a lesser amount of work, then you had a lot of people, they were in competition with you. So I don't really think that they were in a position they would feel to give any guidance. And that really didn't bother me because I was always a loner. I mean, I grew up in the streets and stuff. So I kind of already got that from life. So that didn't, you know, freak me out or stop me or, you know, I just used my own inspiration, my own, you know, what did I want? You know, what did I want to create? What did I want to do? Even if I wasn't doing it, I always had like this will of steel that kind of just pushed through. And I thought, okay, well, this is a, you know, exploitive experience or whatever. And we all choose to be there. So that's, you know, there's no judgment on anybody for anything, including, you know, myself. But in the moment, I think it feels like, you know, you have the bigger picture in your mind and you just want to get the chops. Because I always found that, you know, going through all the classes and everything, I was always a slower learner. So even though I was always giving it my all, it was nothing ever came easy for me. So it took like a lot of years of studying to have a breakthrough in class, took a lot of years of doing film work to have a breakthrough in film. And so that's kind of the way it's always been with me. It's never been, oh, I just try something and it just works. You know, it's never been that. So because of that, I kind of know the feeling and how to deal with it a lot. That makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And, you know, and I know I've seen other discussions and other interviews with you where you've talked about your life on the street. So I, you know, definitely want to talk more about sort of how has that shaped you? And it sounds like it's shaped you a lot and almost prepared you for this life of, you know, doing this by yourself and really almost pushing through, because a lot of people look at actors and say, oh yeah, anybody can do that. But in reality, it's a lot more than that.
Yeah. It's a lot more than that, because in the beginning it was, and it's hard not to fall into traps, you know. I mean, just because one person did it one way doesn't mean that it's the right way or it's the only way. And that's the biggest piece of advice I can give anybody, is don't follow the same path as anybody else, because it's never going to work. What worked for one person will never be perfectly repeated and successful for the next. And that's why you must find, how am I different? You know, why am I different? And how can I use that? And that is like the ultimate. That is like when you truly start to get somewhere, is when you realize the difference, I should say, that you have and are. And that is your gold. It's not how you fit in is your gold. It's how that you're completely different, and what you have to offer is different than anybody else. That when you finally come to that realization, and it seems like a lot more people come to it earlier now, which is great. But then of course we see with the internet that conformity is also a problem, because you see a lot of that as well. But that really would be, you know, carving out your own path, doing whatever it is that you need to do, and ultimately creating your own projects, you know, working on other people's, get your chops, you know, become a team player. But really, like, took a long time. And certainly, again, when you're dealing with actual film versus video, and even video in the early days, it was so expensive that you couldn't really do that. But now you could do so much with so little. And so I would say, you know, that's it right there. Create your own stuff. I mean, that's really the bottom line. And so people say, well, you know, I want to be a Hollywood actor. Well, that's a different path that I don't know anything about. I don't know anything about that path. You know, because you would have to, in that case, conform. You would have to do things, you know, step A, step B, step C. You know, you really have to do that. And again, a world I know nothing about, because that was not me. That was just not something that attracted me. And that was not something that was a natural fit for me. So I really had to embrace that, you know, the strangeness of who I was and where I came from fit more with the indie world. So it was a natural thing.
You know, that is extremely insightful as well. And, you know, a lot of people that listen to the show or watch this show aren't necessarily in film, right? But I think what you're saying is relevant across the board, right? Which is differentiate yourself out there, no matter what it is you're doing, you know, find yourself and then be okay with that and put that out there, because that's a path to success. And, you know, for you, and I will say another challenge people have, though, is they don't know themselves. You know, a lot of people don't look within, or at least start not by looking within, but looking without and trying to imitate. So how did you get to that point, Debbie? I mean, because it couldn't have just happened automatically. How did you get to a point when you said, okay, this is me, Debbie, I'm comfortable with that, and I'm going to move forward with this as my unique self?
Well, yeah, I mean, that takes a long time. And I find it very inspirational to see people who find that in their 20s. Like, that blows my mind. I look at them and I think, oh my God, you were so amazing. And you've got it. You've got it so young. And I did not. I mean, like I say, I talk about the 2000s, because that's when I was in, I think it was like, it was really being in an emotional state and just being filled with so much emotion and even rage, really, because when you work with obviously yourself, meaning as an actor in this case, you are working with the emotions that you have. So that means your tools are you. And when you've done a lot of studying, that brings up a lot of stuff if you've really dug deep and done your work. So I think there was a point that I had like a lot of like angst to express. And, you know, it just, so when the roles came around that allowed me to do that, it was almost like a bell going off. It's like, oh, okay. That's what I have to give that people can relate to, because everybody feels that way. You know, what is the, you know, I'm not thinking this at the time, but looking back, what is the common denominator between what I can present or provide as a unique person? And for me, that would be, you know, we all have anger, rage, frustration, hurt, pain. We all have these things. And I have so much of that, that, you know, I can funnel that. It's not that I want to only do that character, but I can funnel that into the energy, and I can tap into that energy and turn it, like Johnny Rotten says, anger is an energy. But it could be in a comedy where you're just completely jacked up and you've got lots of energy and it's funny, but it's all kind of coming from the same well source, if you will. And once you can find that well source and tap into it, and it just takes a lot of not just passive introspection, but actual kind of work. And see, you know, what is it that's hanging me? What's like hanging me up? What is bugging me, or what's making me happy? And combine all that stuff. And sooner or later, you will sort of tap into, oh, well, I'm a really happy person, or I'm a really fill in the blank person. I've got this well of stuff to express. And then how I express that is up to me. You know, I can just, then you learn how to take that same feeling and emotion and funnel it, work it into whatever that you're working on.
Interesting. And again, just like acting in general, it takes a lot of work to get in touch with your emotions and being able to funnel them. Yeah. And I'm wondering, Debbie, you know, as somebody who is in touch with their emotions, what emotion or emotions make you the most uncomfortable?
Yeah. So it's funny, but I, as much as I say, and it's true that I am a very lone person in a sense, I'm also very social. So I think when, I could use the word trigger, although I'm not a fan of the word, because it's so, anything that's overplayed, I become not a fan of, which is really funny because I'm kind of the same way with film genres and movies and stuff like that. If something becomes too mainstream and popular, I cringe and I don't want to go there myself. But I think, you know, being a person who's extremely comfortable working alone, being creative alone, obviously the lockdown has not been a problem for me. You know, I've been writing the whole time and working on stuff. So it's like, it was nothing for me. It was very comfortable for me. I think like when you get into cliques and groups and people deciding who is, I don't want to say cool because I really don't care about that, but for lack of a better phrase, like either worthy or part of the group in quotes, when I come across that kind of stuff and I see that, oh, in order to either work with this person or be a part of blank, you know, this seems to be important. And so then I find that very depressing. I find it very depressing because that's, you know, when I was coming up, and I'm going all over the map with your question here, so I hope that's all right. But when I was coming up, you know, it was very much about, you know, being alone, unless you were going about it a different way, we'll put it that way. So when I see cliques that are not all inclusive and that people kind of do the gang up thing, so we see that a lot nowadays. And so that's a personal pet peeve of mine. And I guess that gives me a lot of, I would say anger, but I don't even know if it, you know, touches me that deeply. It turns me off. You know, that kind of behavior really turns me off because, you know, I don't think that you should be worried about a group or being in a group. And I don't know what on earth you asked me and how I got here, but hopefully this somehow went all the way around to your answer.
Yeah. It's okay. That's why there's no pre-scripts here. This is all just conversation. And it's again, the original question was, you know, is there a specific emotion, you know, that makes you feel uncomfortable? But again, I think this actually delved into something pretty important here, which is what you're talking about, that groupthink of, you know, as being a big, again, use the word trigger, right? But it's something that does evoke a certain emotion in you whenever you see that behavior.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And that would be it. I think that's the answer. A little bit of a general answer, but anything that is not, you know, independent, but everybody could say that they like an independent, be it film or music or whatever, but are they actually behaving that way? Or is it, again, the kind of mob scene or the falling into line? You know, I've just never been interested in that sort of thing. And the whole cancel culture idea, the whole idea of it is that people could gang up on somebody if, and I'm not talking about, you know, the big ones that deserve things, I'm talking about, you know, this ridiculous somebody could say something and it just be taken the wrong way. And it's like very much against what these people are apparently standing for. You're basically just bullying. And so that, I think that makes me really mad, because it always has. I've never liked it. I didn't like it on the street, and I didn't like it working in film, and I don't like it on the internet. I don't like it. I don't like people bullying and being thought police. I really don't.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for sharing your very raw feelings on this. And I think it's apparent, right? This is something that causes those feelings in you. So why do you think that it evokes such an emotion in you? Why is the idea about ganging up, bullying, evoke that in you?
Well, you know, I think because I've gone through it so much. I have gone through it in like every possible way that a person can go through it, like both physically, emotionally, and even working in the indie scene. I feel like there are, unless like even people who like, whether they call it horror movies in general, or they call it indie movies, they still have a bar that if you're not part of, or you're not in that particular echelon, then you're on the, I'll put it in quotes, out, if you will. So I don't like that, because that is not a space of creativity. I think that's a space where, again, you're being forced to judge yourself in a negative sense, not to find yourself in a positive sense. And it's like, okay, well, if I want to be in this particular upper echelon of the indie world, then I would have to be this way or do this type of thing. But you know, there's groups or group or whatever the case may be that may or may not find you worthy of such an inclusive, you know, group, if you will. So then that group that's supposed to be indie and open-minded and, you know, just worried about the art and the creativity, then becomes the very bully that you were avoiding in the first place by working within that world. So I just find that, it is very annoying. And so you're constantly having to recalibrate who you're either, I don't want to say working with, but who you're dealing with, or how you feel about things, and just have to keep going back to, well, I'm only in control of me, and I'm only in control of my art. So that's all I can do. So that's all I'm gonna do. I'm just going to worry about what I'm doing and just unplug from all that craziness.
Yeah, that's first of all, great way to connect all the different concepts today, right? About individualism, knowing yourself, using that as your drive to move forward, and, you know, in spite of all the chaos. And then also you really connected it back to why you don't respond well to people that are bullying, right? Because that bullying culture that is really about, how do you make somebody conform in a lot of ways? And if you're not like us, then, you know, you're on the out. So it's really about individualism, which seems to have been a theme throughout your entire life. So thank you for making all those connections.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. So we are actually at about 30 minutes. I wanted to sort of ask one final question from you. I'm trying to think what that question may be, actually, because there's so many things to ask. So I'm going to ask this. What is one thing you think that people misperceive about you?
Oh, that's pretty easy. It's so easy.
Okay.
Well, I think that people associate... Well, okay, I'm going to step back and walk into the question a different way. I'm going to say that I always laughed my whole life and my whole career, because I would say to my friends, I would say, but, you know, I made this movie, for example. It could also go for writing as well, or something like that. But I made this movie, and it's so good. Like, everything about it is so good. Everybody came together, and it's awesome. But people just keep like putting under my name, be it like a convention or whatever, you know, when they credit you, they choose what credits often. Well, they used to. Now I'm, you know, they kind of force my hand to say, listen, I would like these to be mentioned perhaps, because they would always choose these whacked out ones for shock value. Like they would say, Debbie Rochon, star of Scrotal Vengeance. And I'd be like, well, that was a fun movie and it's hilarious. And it's just a comedy. It's not like everybody be, oh, must be a porn actress. No, no, no. It's a hilarious comedy with Chris Sieber, who's a friend of mine, and he makes amazingly funny movies. So I have no problem with that. But it was funny because one time he actually said to me, he said, you know, Debbie, I want to like apologize that these titles are people constantly associate because they have never seen the movies and they're making assumptions on crazy titles, which is what the movie making used to be a lot. Make a crazy title, get attention. You don't have the money that a studio has. So you got to have a hilarious or crazy title to grab the attention. And, you know, just the title alone can get press. So walking into the question, I would say that the range of stuff that I've done that people don't know it, you know, like, for instance, I'm just throwing things out there randomly. But, you know, in the 90s, I was doing a column for Joe Bob Briggs in his We Are the Weird magazine that he put out. It was more like a news, fancy newsletter, but it was, you know, like a zine, I should say. So I did that for a few years. And I've like worked with a lot of people that it's like people will only choose to make this weird assumption about you that is just, it's about 1% or 0.5% of what you've done. And so I think that's the biggest misconception is that, you know, yes, look at that stuff. It's real, it's there, I'm here for it. But also look at, you know, the post stuff I've done. Take a look at, you know, the dramatic stuff or the more serious stuff or the H.P. Lovecraft stuff that I've done. And then, you know, once you've seen sort of a little bit more of a well-rounded, you know, picture, then you can make any assumption you want about me. You know, don't just watch just the trauma stuff or just the full moon stuff. Take a look at all of it. And if you don't want to, just watch the trailers. You know what I mean? You could just, if you don't want to invest the time in the actual movies, it's not worth your time, then just like educate yourself a little bit. Like don't peg me into a corner with an idea because you saw a couple of things on IMDb and you put some ridiculous notion together that's who I am. When in fact, the biggest thing I do now is, I still work on films. I still, you know, have my second directing project coming up and I do a lot of voice stuff. I've always done radio since the 90s, terrestrial, satellite, and then podcast. And I've produced other people on the radio. So, you know, I've done like a lot of producing as well. So it's sort of like, and even with the Fango radio show, is one of the co-producers of the show. So, you know, it's kind of like to simply throw somebody into the, how would I describe it? Well, I don't think anybody would necessarily go the bimbo route, but, you know, simplistic or just silly or just exploitive, I think that's you're not even scratching the surface. You're just kind of, you know, going by way. And the other side of it too, to give them credit, is if you were to look superficially and not do any homework and not do any looking into somebody before you're judging them, then, you know, I could see why somebody would feel that way. You know, I could see it, but, you know, if that's how you're judging people just by scratching the surface and you're not, you know, fully getting it, then that's something that people often do with me.
Thank you. That was extremely insightful. And again, it speaks to the theme throughout this whole discussion, which is about your individualism and the complex, wonderfully complex person that you are. So I think that was extremely helpful to hear. Thank you. And I want to thank you for sharing that. And I want to thank you for participating in this conversation today. I really enjoyed hearing about just sort of your journey and your focus, your extreme positive focus on individualism. So thank you for sharing that today, Debbie.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for your patience. This was 10 years in the making. No, I'm kidding, but I'm only half kidding. Thank you for everything. I appreciate your time and being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. And again, enjoyable conversation. So, and I want to, of course, thank the listeners and the viewers out there who are tuning into Brain Burrow. And on behalf of Debbie Rashawn, this is Mark DeValenti. Have an amazing rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram @ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.